everybody, and a very warm welcome to our Passion Pod. Well, today we're coming your way from a very special location. I'm super excited. I feel like this has been 3+ years in the making. We are actually in the Zurich Zoo. And with me is the director of the zoo, Severin Dresden. Hi, Severin.
Hi.
Well, okay, so listen, I haven't told you the story. I have to start this with telling you why we're actually here. At the very beginning of this podcast, when we started this, and this is sort of an episode in that to, honor these friends of ours who've been with us since the first minute, we had a very, let's just say, nervous participant in this podcast. One of our financial experts was really not super comfortable with the first time being behind this microphone, which I totally respect and understand. And to calm him down, I made a point that he shouldn't worry too much. Not very many people internally listen to this, which isn't true. And nobody would listen to both the German and the English version. We leave the room, and exactly the next person we run into is our head of compliance, who goes, "Oh, you're doing the podcast. I listen to them every week in both languages." So literally the next one. So we thought that at some point we should do an episode just to, play a joke on him, that we do the normal one in German and then the English one reporting from the zoo. So finally we're here.
Very good. Excellent.
It started as a joke, but it turned into a different reason. And the reason really is that we're trying to capture the things that really create value, that have nothing to do with the straightforward idea of spending money for something and getting something back, but that really, where the entire work and the approach goes into creating something of such great value that people participate and have, a wonderful experience with it. And in that, all joking aside, in that angle, I'm very glad that we get to talk to you today. That was a very long intro, but I really wanted to get this off my chest because I think it's good for reference. Severin, now to you. I'll dive right in this question of creating something of value. The zoo here in Zurich, what is it that you mainly create?
Well, I think the unique thing about a zoo is actually that we have 4 different reasons why we exist, and in your words, maybe 4 reasons where we can create value. Mm-hmm. And they're all equally important, and they are the education, right? This is kind of engaging our visitors, and that is super important these days when we look at the biodiversity crisis.
Yeah.
The second thing is research, understanding our animals better. Most animals actually poorly understood, mm-hmm. and we need to understand them better in order to protect them in their natural environment. The third one is species conservation. So many, if not the majority of species that we keep in our zoo is unfortunately endangered, and we try in a system to protect them. And the last one is then actually, let's call it field conservation. So our engagement in different projects internationally to support protection of biodiversity. And they're all very different. They all are interlinked with each other, and they all create a different additional value.
That's a really beautiful sort of summary of it. Can I dive deep into each one of them in a way?
Absolutely.
And maybe if I can pick up the question of creating knowledge and context. Of course, I want to know how you do that, what are the approaches. But can I start with you maybe? This question of knowledge, the hunger for such knowledge, right? Like your curiosity around these subjects. I know you got really early on into mm-hmm. this idea. Can you talk a bit personally about how you got interested? Where was this passion born?
Well, I think animals always fascinate me. The diversity, the uniqueness of all species, right? So you have species that are so different. Not only that they look very different, but they function very different, and they're all beautiful, right? Mm. If you look at nature, it's just beautiful. And like the wing of a fly that usually is so annoying to us if it's around us, if you look at it closely, it's a beautiful piece of art, right? And that fascinated me early on. It had nothing to do with zoos. But then I understood quite early that if I want to be around animals, around nature, then a zoo is a very good approach, right? Because there are a lot of animals in zoos. So this, I think, was very originally my motivation. And, you know, when other kids want to become an astronaut or firefighter, whatever, I wanted to become a zoo director. Not because I understood how zoos works, but because there are animals in zoos. But then relatively early on, I think, for usual, let's say, choice of a job to do, like, let's say, in my teenage years, I understood what additional values zoos can create, what kind of beneficial work zoos can create beyond just exhibiting animals. And that was then when it became really clear that this is really the place to go.
Do you remember that first moment of sort of igniting knowledge around animals for you? Was there a person or a circumstance that really added that, like, sort of momentum for you, where you had hunger, you wanted to know more, and then that was, you know, kind of an experience that was a key for you in your childhood, in your early life?
Well, I guess there are a couple. So there's really not a person. So I come from my family. My family background has nothing to do with animals or biology whatsoever. My father's a lawyer. My mother's a teacher for German language and politics. So something completely different. But I do have these strong memories in, like, me being amazed by individual, like, local animals around, and, you know, in our gardens. It can be a toad or can be, you know, a bird or whatever. And then there's a strong memory. So I grew up close to the Dutch border, and Dutch zoos always have been very innovative and very modern. And there's a particular zoo close to the German border that really started early on with these big ecosystem displays, so building big greenhouses and having a lot of life in there. And I remember quite vividly this experience of being in there, being amazed by, you know, this kind of semi-natural setting, but also being amazed how amazed everybody else was, you know, and what effect this combination of, let's say, nature and animals, or vegetation and animals, had on the other people. I love that experience.
Do you know of any stories here that touched you of little children? I mean, I even know some. My, you know, immediate family, the kids in there, they love the zoo so much. I think that joy and that sort of magic of a zoo that's cross-generational and just a human thing. Oh,
absolutely. And in particular here in Zurich, I've worked in many zoos. I've been to many more zoos, and I've never seen a zoo with such profound and deep connection to the local society.
Isn't that true?
That's unbelievable. It is not imaginable if you haven't seen that. And even in these days and day and age where, you know, everybody goes digital, the amount of, you know, drawing and paintings we get from kids, whenever something changes in the zoo, when there's a new species, when a species leaves us, when there's a new exhibit, whatever happens, kids capture that. That's unbelievable.
I love what you just said. So we're doing this podcast in English, and we jokingly, when we prepared, said, well, we're going to speak a foreign language anyway, because, you know, we're in Switzerland here and you and I are both German. So it would have either been High German or now it's English. But I'm not from here either. And I was really at awe what a fixture and what an important role the zoo plays for children here growing up, and adults remembering going. It's a very much more integrated than I have ever experienced. And I'm, you know, a huge animal lover, but there wasn't such an experiential place for me.
No, it is, and it goes beyond the children. It expands into almost all parts of society, and that is, it is. I mean, that's crucial for our zoos, how our zoo works, but this is also how our zoo flourishes well, because there is so much pride for the zoo here, and such a strong identification with this zoo. That's really unique. I mean, it's beautiful. It allows us to work and develop in the way how we do, but and it's amazing, this passion that maybe is not one of the key character traits of people from Zurich, is a strong passion, but they really show this passion when it comes to the zoo, and that's beautiful.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. And if we go to sort of the next one of the four points that you made that interests me very much, is this idea of protection and preserving biodiversity and, you know, bringing all of that to flourish. Can you talk a bit more about that part?
Yes. I mean, so we all know that biodiversity is under an immense threat, and there's a decline, steady decline in biodiversity, and there are really two to three, depending how you count it, but components to it. And obviously one is really protecting biodiversity.
Yeah.
And that is being done in the best way in that place where biodiversity exists. So mm-hmm. this is why one of our strong places or fields of engagement is that we do have these projects all over the world that we support. And there it's about ecosystem protection.
Yeah.
These are national parks that protect thousands, sometimes tens of thousands of species, both plants and animals. However, then there are many places where this might not be enough, right? There might be particular species that are so under such threat that it is not enough to protect the space. There might be places in the world where local government is not able yeah. to enforce protection, et cetera, et cetera. So there are many cases, unfortunately, where it is necessary to build kind of what we call ex situ backup populations, right? Where we work together within the European framework, within the European Zoo Association to build up backup or reservoir populations so that for the worst case scenarios where an animal goes extinct or species goes extinct or is degraded to such level where we need additional individuals from our zoo population to enable the population or the animal to survive, right? And this is kind of interlinking, right? One is about protecting the ecosystem and one is about protecting the species. And research links a little bit both. We need to understand ecosystems, but we also need to understand the individual, the particular species.
How do you manage this with your mental health? I mean, even hearing you talk about this, I get really anxious and very mad at people who deny, that there is an issue. You don't have to answer, but I think, you know, if I put myself in your shoes, I think I would, I don't know if I could do this. Like, it would be such a, I'm not even expanding. You know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, but I think that is I think that's in a way the beauty of my job, that we can actually make a difference.
Yeah.
And even though these are like tiny, tiny steps, and sometimes you go, one step, and then you have to take three steps back,
yeah.
and it can be frustrating, it can be slow, but at the end of the day, you can still make a difference.
What's your biggest hurdle, you'd say, at the moment, trying to do the work that you want to do at the best possible version of it? You can say money. We're a bank. We can.
Funds are obviously always important. Unfortunately, there is not the one key factor,
yep.
right?
Okay.
And that is a problem because it makes it even more complex.
Of course.
So I think. If I look at it, that's a very good question. I think holistically, probably what plays a big role in all different fields is in a way, you could call it ignorance from us as humans, but it's probably also a little bit, let's say, fear or short-sightedness that, we don't want to face that truth, that we're running into a problem. It's understandable. This is how we humans are wired,
yeah.
right? We're looking at the step ahead and not in, 100-kilometer difference,
yeah.
what's coming up.
Yeah.
So that is certainly a big issue. But then there are also other issues, like, let's say, more locally, but that then branches out to our engagement here in our zoo, is that it becomes increasingly hard in the city of Zurich to have innovative projects. Mm-hmm. There's a nice culture of taking everything to the court these days. And this is a general development and we are not spared from that. So we have to wait sometimes for years, sometimes for decades before we can change things. That slows our ability to improve, let's say, for example, animal welfare, which in turn is important for very endangered species or our research capacities. We are slowed down by that. And that is maybe special for us. Luckily, many other zoos don't have that same issue.
Yeah.
But for us in Zurich, that is certainly a topic.
Yeah, I hope that you find a way to calm that down, at least. I guess not solving, because, yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, what is a more manageable hurdle? I mean, I think what I would imagine is just running such a big team here, right? And kind of keeping that all going, keeping everybody engaged. Also, you started during the pandemic. I meant to ask you about that. What a hurdle that was. I mentioned to you that I'm an art historian. This is the every other year. This is the biennial in Venice. And the curator of the one that was right after the pandemic had to do all the studio visits over Zoom, which I think is just marvelous. So when you started, did you meet all the animals over Zoom too?
No, so actually, I don't think I did it. I didn't do a single day of home office. So I was here. And Corona was, in a way, a challenge. The scientifically run zoos in Switzerland really realized that we didn't have a good representation in Bern. Everybody loves us, but at the end, nobody knows in what kind of box to put us in.
Yep.
Are we a museum? Are we a school? Yeah. Are we a theme park? Whatever. And so we didn't receive any governmentally help. You know, we got a little bit furlough, but in a zoo you can't put many people on furlough. So that wasn't. I mean, it was nice to get that, but it wasn't too helpful. And we were closed for quite a long time because everybody was scared about people gathering in masses in the zoo.
Yeah.
However, luckily, and if you look at how Switzerland dealt with the pandemic in comparison to most other nations, especially the nations bordering Switzerland, Switzerland dealt with it, I think, really well and really quickly, you know, lifted restrictions. So that what we saw after the first lockdown was kind of bouncing back, and Swiss people didn't want to go to Germany or France or Italy because restrictions were still super strict. So instead they came to us. So in a way we managed, but it was certainly a very special point in time to take over.
I'm sure. Can I pick something up that you mentioned in passing just then? You said that people weren't quite sure where to put you, in which box, museum or school or a theme park, I think you said. This level of entertainment, this is now, follow me for a second, hope it makes sense, but this sort of attitude towards something, an institution like a zoo, that I imagine people had 100 years ago, right? Like where you go and you're entertained and you find, I don't know, delight in the funny looking animals that you've never seen. Obviously, this is shifting dramatically, has shifted dramatically. But still, I'm imagining this as a process that is ongoing, that the sort of self-understanding of what the role of a zoo is, as much as it has shifted, is still developing. From your perspective, and also having been in this world for much longer than just professionally, also with your personal passion for this, how do you see that sort of tendency, right? Where is the development coming from in recent years? Were there major shifts, and where is it going?
Well, I think that there are two parts or two answers to this question. I think one important shift that is happening is that zoos have to explain themselves, and I think that is super important.
Yeah.
And I know that many see that in our community as a threat, and it can be annoying and sometimes, but I think bottom line is super important, because only when you're challenged, you move out of your comfort zone.
Sure.
You admit to things that don't work well at the moment, and you move on and you improve yourself. So I think that has been extremely important for the development, the recent, let's say, two decades or so. Has been that we have been challenged, and I think zoos that really took that on and that faced the challenges and that improved in this are now also zoos which are really placed well within the society, where there's very little, for example, criticism coming along. Obviously, you will never have 100% of society in favor of you, but we see it here. We took on these challenges, and we are now. We are so settled, or we are so well put in the center of society. The terms of, let's say, the theme park part of that question is, well, if we are honest, people still come to us because they want to have a nice day.
Sure, that's maybe okay too.
And that is okay, exactly. Yeah. However, when we started initially talking about, you know, what additional value zoos create, I didn't mention leisure activity, right?
Yeah.
And because we firmly believe we have these four fields, and these are kind of our intrinsic motivation, but we don't keep animals to give people a nice time, yeah, a nice day out, yeah, right? Mm-hmm. However, this is still the motivation why people come to Aarhus, right? So we have a beautiful museum in the city of Zurich, Landesmuseum, and they have 300,000 visitors a year. We have 1.4 million.
Yeah.
Because we are not associated with learning. You don't want to learn. If you go to a museum, you have to learn. You don't want to do that. You want to have a nice day out with your kids, with yourself, with your friends, whatever. This is why people come to us. However, we can take advantage of that. And we can then create moments of beauty. We can create emotional moments for our visitors where they see the beauty in animals, where they see beauty in nature. Because we humans, we all work in the same way, that we are only willing to protect what we know.
100%.
Right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is why everybody wants to protect first his or her own family, kids, partner, before we're protecting people we've never seen in our life. And this is how we work. So if we don't create these emotional connection, no chance in hell that we humans are willing to change our behavior in order to protect.
Yeah.
And this is the beauty. Now we reach people who maybe never thought about that, right? And we can create these connections. This is one of the biggest potentials of a good modern zoo.
Yeah, I love that notion. And the experience that you're mentioning too, it's such a, I mean, and I come from a museum background actually, right? Like, so yeah, I come from an arts background and worked in museums for a very long time too. And I think the experiential part of it, when you enter those halls and it's much more awe-inspiring often, right? It's emptier, the sounds you hear, it's usually rather quiet. I think it does evoke a certain emotional reaction, but it is more one of distance, awe, respect, marvel. Whereas here, it's so much more, it grabs you so differently, right? The sounds you hear, the smells you smell, the outsideness of it, right? Like everything that comes with it. I think the holistic experience of probably also the zoo in particular is so engaging, you can't really fight it in a way. You know what I mean? Like the experience that you're creating really is...
It's with all your senses, absolutely.
Completely, yeah. In an engaged way too. Yeah, I agree. Do you facilitate, if people are here, what kind of program, if you want to participate? So now the spark is in me, I want to protect the animal. What? Mm-hmm. How do you pave the way for people to be able to be a part of such a...
Yeah. So this is actually something where we will see it, where we see a certain change in the next years in our zoo happening. I think where we have been really, really good so far is whenever we had the chance to engage with you face to face. We have a large group of highly, not only trained, but motivated volunteers. We have a large group of guides, all with a science background, so all very well trained. And whenever we have people in our zoo as part of a group, a guided tour, whatever, we are already superb to kind of convey examples how you in particular can change your behavior, can add to protecting biodiversity. However, for our normal guest, we have been a little bit, how can I put it, a little bit shy in kind of passing on the message.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we need to be a little bit more direct these days. People don't want to read. People have a very short attention span. So once we grab their attention or grasp their attention because of this beauty they see, we then need to give them one clear message or two clear messages, but you know, in a very limited way. And I think this is something where we're moving into now. We just inaugurated a first exhibition earlier this year, which kind of follows this new philosophy. And we will now see every year, let's say, traditional exhibitions, which are very content heavy, focusing more now on a clear message, how everybody's with like small actions, right? Small actions can contribute to protecting biodiversity.
That's a beautiful thought. Also, I do want to plug that people can support the zoo too. Just your mission can actually be supported by simply donating or being a part of it. I do want to say this out loud because it is important to me.
I mean, you're right. We rely massively on societal support.
Yes.
We can the only reason, so we receive a little bit of governmental subsidies, but that's less than 10% of operational budget. So we kind of manage to kind of finance our operational budget more or less ourselves through ticketing and all these kind of things. But all these new ecosystem displays, all these innovative exhibits that we are able to build in such a unique way, they are only possible because we get such a strong support from many, many different individuals, from foundations, but also in terms of legacies.
Yeah. And if anybody's now wondering if this is a hidden plug, it's not a hidden plug. It's a very out in the open, because I think everybody should support this really amazing institution that we have here. We'll put some link or something like that in the show notes so people know where to go.
Excellent.
I have one more question for you, but now it's kind of escaped me. Did I neglect to ask you anything that I should have asked that was important to you?
Well, we haven't looked so far in the future of our zoo.
We looked in the past. That's brilliant. Yes,
but I think this is something which is also very exciting for our zoo, because the old master plan took 30 years to finish it, and was finished in 2020, just in time when I took over. So we spent first year and a half, the whole team, of kind of coming up with this next master plan, which again will cover 30 years. And there's a lot more to it than, let's say, in the public version. There's a lot of exactly all these what we talked about. How can we get better in education, in conveying the message, in research and conservation? But then there is also, let's say, the obvious development in the zoo, the thing that people will see when they come to us. And mm-hmm. what we will see is we'll move more and more into this kind of ecosystem display. So who has ever been to our zoo knows about our Mazoala rainforest, huge rainforest hall, and it's now 20 years old and it's still gold standard globally. Zoos from all over the world come to us and basically get the blueprints to rebuild that.
Awesome.
And this is kind of our idea, how we can move on to kind of always, whenever we move on to new ecosystem display, to kind of think, what is the gold standard? What is the next big innovative idea? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the next one will hopefully be a big aviary for the animals from the Brazilian Pantanal, a huge wetland. There again, some people who weren't that amazed about that project took it to court, but hopefully by the I don't know when will this be aired?
In 2023 for sure. So probably in 2 weeks or something like that. Right. So we're recording this now. I have to add, we're now in the middle of November. We're on the 15th of November. So I'd say soon.
So after this podcast went on air, we will know whether the opponents took it to the next court level, because first ruled in our favor. However, it will be such an innovative project where we will have a huge aviary, similar like 1 hectare size, 35 meters high.
Fantastic.
And we will have space to large flocks of birds, of endangered species from the Brazilian Pantanal.
So cool.
And we will be immersing our visitors in that, so you will be able to walk through it. And the Pantanal is a big wetland, which in rainy season is completely flooded. And we thought, how can we simulate that? So we will be able to flood our entire aviary. So everything will be underwater for periods of time
in
the year.
It's incredible.
And that will not only be super exciting for our guests, but it will also be a very, let's say, radical step in animal husbandry, because our animals will always face different settings. Their environment will constantly change, like in nature. So that is very exciting. No one has ever tried that. We have big testing plots nearby where we test these kind of things. And this is kind of the mentality of this new master plan. This is the spirit behind it. And that is, it's a great privilege that I can be part of that.
I love that. That kind of big thinking is just so fantastic. I'm so excited. I hope this will go through. When would it be built if everything goes smoothly from now on?
Then we will open in 2028.
Mm-hmm.
So let's keep a finger crossed that we don't have to wait for another court to rule on that matter. But otherwise, we'll start early in 2024 with construction and then opening 2028.
That's fantastic. That's such a good thing to look forward to. So I don't want to take too much of your time, but this was so... I know we said something like 20 minutes. We're dramatically over that. But it was such a wonderful conversation. Thank you so much for your generosity. Those were beautiful words. And I couldn't, you know, have asked for a better introduction to the zoo in such a deep level. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
And we thank you, as always, so much for listening. We hope that you enjoyed this very special episode. Oh, actually, sorry, can I ask before I close, is there any significant sound to a giraffe? Does a giraffe make a sound? Do you know this? Because I really don't.
When they run, they're quite. They look quite elegant, but when they run, you will hear the hooves quite heavily on the ground.
Yeah.
But otherwise, they don't make a silent sound, right? Animals. Yeah.
Okay. Well, wonderful. So we ended this episode with the long asked questions. What sounds do giraffes make? None. It's good to know that. I'm not kidding. That was a discussion. I've never known. So I had a certified expert to tell me that they don't make any sounds. That's good. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.